Authentic Wellness Radio.
All right, everyone, welcome back to episode number 45 of Authentic Wellness Radio. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm sorry I've been away from the microphone for a little bit. Was very busy doing the Child Obesity Project Summit, but I've got an amazing guest today. Now, he is a New York Times best-selling author of The Paleo Kitchen. He's actually 53% civilized, 47% caveman, which is great. It makes him the perfect podcast guest. His name's George Bryan, and he's here to talk to us today about the mindset of food. So, George, how are you going?
Good. How are you?
Good. Did you like that little intro?
I'm actually writing it down right now. That was the best intro I've ever had. Part civilized, part caveman. I love it.
It was 53%. I got your test results back from the doctor.
And got it.
It makes you the perfect person to talk about food. That's the exact ratio I was after.
I might actually add that to my bio.
That would be amazing. So, George, you're obviously a paleo enthusiast, and you're someone who talks quite a lot about food. You've written books called The Paleo Kitchen, I've written this down, but I can't read my own writing, Crockpot, Paleo Breakfast, Paleo Entrees, Paleo Sides and Sauce. Basically, paleo, whatever you want to eat.
Yes.
When it comes to food, why have you made food such a big deal in your life? Because you've got a bit of an interesting story about how you got to there.
Yeah, totally. And I really appreciate you giving me that space to share. So paleo for me, and for those of you that may or may not know what paleo is, it's just another lifestyle. No grains, no beans, no dairy. And I've come to shift my viewing of paleo a lot to where it's more of a template and a framework to reset your body and then reintroduce foods that support you. So for me, when I started paleo, I was really dogmatic about it. And the reason being is because I was bulimic. So I struggled with bulimia for 12 years. I gained and lost 100 pounds. And I had a really unhealthy relationship with food for most of my life until about 2 years ago. And it all stemmed from an addictive personality. So I never grew up with a healthy food relationship. I never had a meal at a table with my family. Like, we never had dinner ever in my entire life. So everything was grab and go, fend for yourself. And food was an emotional avenue for me. So food was where I went when I didn't feel safe at home or when I was living on my own at 15. And food then became my addiction on top of body image issues and the bulimia as well. So paleo, when I started, was just another tool for me to try to control my addiction, which we all know, or anybody in the world of addiction knows, that you don't get to control your addiction. There is no such thing. It's just a false pretense that we tell ourselves so we think we're winning. And what I loved about paleo and what ended up happening for me is that as I was eating paleo or the paleo lifestyle, a lot of things that I was struggling with started to go away. My hormones were regulated. My sleep was better. I was effortlessly losing weight, which was feeding the superficial side of my eating disorder because I was looking a lot different. I had a six pack. And what ended up happening was as I ended up hitting like the critical shifting point where I started realizing the importance of food in my life, not to control how I looked, but to control how I felt. And that food was responsible for pretty much every result that I had in my life. If I had an unhealthy relationship with food, I couldn't possibly have a healthy relationship with a person, with a work, with coworkers, with friends, because it was never grounded on an honest, open, authentic premise. So I talk about paleo a lot and I talk about food a lot. And the reason I bridged the gap to mindset is because I realized very quickly after my success is that you show up the same in every area of your life, even if you think you don't. And so what I mean by that is people will tell me all the time, well, you know, I work at like 75% at work, but I'm 100% committed to my relationship and 100% committed to my diet. And I'm like, well, you just ate a bag of M&Ms, so you probably cheat at work and your wife doesn't feel loved. And they look at me like I'm crazy. And I'm like, just think about it. Just think about it. Like, we don't have the ability to multitask as pros, and our subconscious behaviors run our lives. So unless you create a new habit, you are always going to innately fall back into your patterns that your subconscious is comfortable with, which is what got you to that point in your life. So for me, food and mindset pretty much saved my life, and paleo became the thing that I was most passionate about. I ended up losing 100 pounds. I overcame a 12-year battle of bulimia, and now I do as much as I can to spread the, as much word as possible about having a healthy relationship with food and how important it is in your life. So I guess that's a small little snippet of my life. Oh, and I was an active duty Marine for 12 years. I was medically separated because I struggle with post-traumatic stress disorder as well as traumatic brain injury. And I use food to treat all my symptoms of those things as well. I had 7 concussions in 3 years and a few different things like that. So food for me became both like an emotional medicine as well as a physical medicine. And I realized that in order for me to function at my highest and be here as long as possible for my family, for my wife, and for my children, is I need to pay attention to my food because it's the fuel that I put in my car and I don't get to trade this body in.
Mm. Now, you just described like a positive kind of mindset towards food, but there's also a negative mindset. And you said a few things there that I think you and I are very similar in a lot of ways. We both had eating problems when we were younger. We both went to CrossFit. We both went to the CrossFit style diet, which back when I was doing CrossFit was the zone diet.
Zone. Yep.
Yeah. Remember that?
Yep.
Now it's paleo. Do you think there are certain types of people who are more likely to have problems when it comes to issues with and around food?
Oh, for sure. I you know what, to be completely honest with you, how I view it and the way that we are in society now with social media and being so disconnected from actually human interaction and everybody like living in this false pretense of what they think people's lives look like, I feel like everybody is susceptible at having an unhealthy relationship with food, either in a manner of where they're depriving themselves and punishing themselves, or they're so orthorexic and food obsessed that it runs their life and is unhealthy. And I believe it's prevalent in our entire society because as a world, our focus on food shifted dramatically from being something that provides life and quality matters and it's good for you and you need it to, it doesn't really matter about the quality, eat it as fast as possible, and if you don't feel good, take all these medications to try to fix it. And it's, I feel like I am almost speechless thinking about it because it's such a crazy, crazy thing to think about that we're so disrespectful to our bodies and our mindsets and our health by what we choose to put in our bodies. And like you mentioned right before we started is that we're going to talk about how when people are talking about their goals or their life or what they're up to, you never hear people say like, my goal is to feed myself the most nutritious food possible so I can perform my best. It's always like, I'm going to go to the gym more or I'm going to sleep more. And I'm like, those are great. But if you put water in your gas tank, your car's going to die. And it's the same thing with your body. So I feel like everybody is susceptible to having an unhealthy relationship with food. And the great thing about it is, and similarly to you, and I'm sure this shift happened in you too, no matter where you are, no matter how negative you may view it, no matter what part of your life you are in, the amazing thing about food is that you get 3 opportunities a day to practice something new. And that's really, really why I love it. I do all my keynotes on how to create breakthrough results in your life with food. And I stick to food because no matter where we are in life, no matter what our circumstances are, if you lose your job, you lose your relationship, you gain a ton of weight, whatever the case is that is for you, no matter what happens, you can't stop eating. So if we can create a positive anchor and a mindset and a habit around your eating, those results are going to trickle out everywhere in your life.
Now, when it comes to transformation, most people come and see someone like me as a trainer and they kind of get like, yeah, I need to exercise because I got to lose weight. And they just accept that. But when it comes to the food side of things, people can be very resistant. And mm-hmm. while they get like, okay, yeah, exercise is something that I just can't get away from, it's like this food thing, it's like extra work for them or it's something they have to do or that they're, you know, it's kind of optional, but it's like, it's too much work. I can't be bothered to. So is the process of transforming someone's nutrition actually work or can it be seen as something else?
Oh, totally. Yeah. God, that's a great question because I hear it too. I mean, you know, I get over 1 million people a month on my website. So the comments I get are insane. And the amount of excuses that people make for their lives or their choices to continue to stay in their comfort zone of unhealthiness or diabetes or cancer or obesity. So I feel like the reason people view food as work is because they've let it become an inconvenience rather than realizing how important it is. They take their cell phones, they take their Instagram, their Facebook more seriously than they take their health. And what I've learned is that being extremely blunt, upfront, and authentic with people is what seems to resonate the best for people that I encounter, and even in podcasts when I get on stage. And I'm just going to give people an example. I think that's actually the best question so far. It's because there's so many pieces to it for the mindset piece, which is what the undertone of this whole thing is. And for your clients and for anybody listening, when we're talking here and we're like, hey, you know, to have amazing results in your life, you need to change the way that you look at food and eat. If you're experiencing resistance to that, or it caused a reaction at you, it means that it landed and you know you need to change, and you're in denial or in defense of becoming the best version of yourself. And so looking at that and having a hard look at life and having a hard look at the results that you have in life, when you avoid the things or you scoff at them or you put them down, those are typically the things that you need to do the most. And I tell people that I talk to all the time, and I tell people on stage, you need to be a heat-seeking missile for what you fear most or what makes you uncomfortable, because that's where growth happens. And so what I do, and I'm going to get into this too because I love this, I have three really, really simple steps to literally win at life, but use food to have a better relationship, develop a healthy relationship with it, and create better habits. But I open every one of my talks. I do it, I call it 60 seconds of authenticity. And I start a clock, and for 60 seconds, I stand on the stage and I tell people how I'm feeling. And not like, oh, I feel so happy to be here. Like, I've been on stage and there's been people in the audience that I do not like. And I'm like, I literally stood on the stage and said, I'm extremely nervous. I'm sick to my stomach. So-and-so is here and so-and-so is here. And I actually wish that they weren't here, but because I'm here to deliver a bigger message, I'm going to share this anyways. And I just like drop everything. I was sexually abused. I was bulimic. I lost 100 pounds. I lost my dad to cancer. And the reason I say that is because what I've learned to be the most powerful tool for me in my life is authenticity. And when I'm experiencing resistance to something, let's say food or changing my diet or not eating a cupcake or not pounding sugar, if I'm experiencing resistance to that, or I'm scared of change, or I don't want to do it, I talk to my wife and I take a hard look at it, like, babe, like, I'm really struggling. And she's like, why? And I'm like, well, because I might actually be successful. I might reach the goals that I want to hit. I might actually have to prove my story and my narrative wrong. So for everybody listening, I think the simple focus is, yeah, I just said is six times. I think
I heard that. Yeah, that was good.
I think I was really trying to emphasize this point, but what the real focus is focusing back on what food really is. Like, without food, you don't live. Like, that's the bottom line. Without food and nourishment, you die. Without feeding your food feeding your body quality food, you die. You get cancer, you get diabetes, you get obesity, you get inflammation, and you get everything else associated with it. And I ask you, for anybody listening, whether you're a mother, a father, a husband, a wife, a daughter, or a son, think about how those other people are going to feel when you're selfish and you choose to eat a donut and a cupcake rather than take care of yourself to prolong your life and be the change in this world that we all need, to like be a leader in the movement of people taking their health seriously. And Russell Simmons said it best. He said, however hard it may feel now will never be as hard as dealing with the regret of not doing it. And that really lands for me because, you know, the truth is I was a Marine for 12 years. I've been to Afghanistan. I've been to Somalia. Like, I've been in the crap that you don't want to be. Like, I don't wish it on anybody. But one of the things, like we always said, is you have to get comfortable being uncomfortable, because that's where growth happens. And really, if you look at any moment in your life, any adversity in your life, any pain, any sorrow, any sadness, it eventually always ends. Like, no matter what is going on, there is always an end point to where growth happens and circumstances change. And when you can really, really focus on that and know that you are capable and powerful to overcome all those limitations, to overcome your brain and even your body sometimes telling you that you don't possess the capacity to do it, even if it's food craving or you're hungry or you're tired, pushing past that point is what creates those amazing results and the visionaries in this world that we all strive to be, like Oprah, Richard Branson, Deepak Chopra, like all these people. So that's how I feel about that one. Mm. I'll let you talk now.
Well, you mentioned the two words that really stood out for me: authentic and uncomfortable. Now, This is one thing that I do. I give other people permission to call BS on me when I'm not doing what I say I should do. So if I were to go and say, look, I'm going to do this every single week and I'm going to do this, I give all my friends and the people around me permission to say, hey, just so you know, you said you were going to do this and you're totally not doing it. Like, I'm not judging you. I'm not saying you're a bad person, but you told me to call you on it when you don't do it. Is that something that you recommend people do? Like, give other people permission to just be blunt about them?
Totally. Like, and I feel, oh God, I love that you said that. Like, I like you even more that you said that. Lindsay and I do a lot of personal development work. My wife's been doing personal development work for like 16 or 17 years, and she's phenomenal. Like, my wife went from like the scariest situation in her life. She was married unhappily, had a daughter, and didn't have a career, and made the decision to leave, take on like $500,000 in debt to start over with her daughter. And within a year was on stage with Maria Shriver, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Oprah's boyfriend, Eric Trump. And she was speaking with them because she created a product and said, my life gets to be different. And she used people and masterminds to hold herself accountable. And I actually am going to take it one step further than you do. I love that you do that. And I think everybody needs to have an accountability partner. Number one, your brain is your own worst enemy. If you keep it in your head, if you set goals in your head, they only live in your head. That's where they're going to stay, and you're going to spend your whole life wondering why you never achieved your dreams, and it's because you never put your ass to the fire and made impossible, and you have to speak them into existence to make them real. Like, I tell people that all the time, and it's both a negative and a positive, and this is going to really apply when we dive further into the mindset piece, but things that live in your brain, they stay there, and your brain creates concoctions around them and stories around them to either be true or not true, but it's based on your experiences in life. So when you can take your dreams and your goals or whatever you're committing to, like I'm going to work out 3 times a week or I'm going to drink 8 cups of water a day, and you make that goal and you write it down and you share it with people and you put it out into the universe, you become accountable to yourself, you become accountable to other people, and you become accountable to something bigger than you. And when you keep it in your head, you'll always make excuses. Like, I was just about to say that, man.
There is no one who is better at making excuses and rationalizing themselves out of doing what they're supposed to do than people who are like food addicts and have problems with food.
Totally. And I want everybody to know there's no one in this world that does not do it. Every single person has the same brain and the same makeup, and it's our brain's responsibility to try to keep us safe, to keep us in our comfort zone, because being uncomfortable signals our body that there's something going on, something bad's about to happen, and that's not always the case. And I am the same damn way. Like, I want to be a billionaire. I want to own the world so I can pay it forward and help people and educate people and create all these things in the world. And I make some lofty goals, and sometimes I hide them in the back of my head for 2 years before I tell my wife, because I literally am like, if I tell my wife, I actually have to do it. And if I actually have to do it, then I actually have to succeed. And then I can't be like, oh, poor me. I don't feel good. I'm not this. I'm not that. And a lot of us like our subconscious to stay in that mode, that like fault mode, that blame mode, the guilt mode. And that was the other piece that I was going to share. One of the biggest things that I ever had a breakthrough in my life was with my sexual abuse. So I was raped twice. I was 9 and 13. Both by non-family members and females, and it really, really messed with me. And the first person to ever know was my wife, and she found out about a year ago. So for 25 years, it lived in my head, and it was like my own worst enemy because it made me question everything, my relationship with food, my relationship with women, my relationship with my mother, and a lot of other things. And I made up in my head that if I was to ever talk about it, if I was ever going to tell people, that they would judge me, they would hold it against me, my friends would leave me, no one would like me, I'm not a real like pure man. I made up all these things and I acted out on them for a long time. And so what happened was on my last keynote at Paleo FX, I stood on that stage and in my 60 seconds of vulnerability, I shared for the first time with anybody that I was sexually abused twice. And for the days leading up to it, I was like a nervous wreck. My wife was like, you'll be fine. You can share. You don't have to, but you're open to. And I learned a very valuable lesson there that I've taken everywhere else in my life, and that it's never as bad as your brain convinces you it will be. I expected people to get up and walk out. I expected people not to listen to my talk. And it was really interesting because I spoke it, and people that were standing down in the back came and found a seat and stayed for the whole time. The exact opposite happened. And it was just a testament that there's always a possibility for growth and positivity, even if you don't think there is, because I thought there was one way out. And I was proved incorrectly that when I shared my goals and I shared my vulnerability and my authenticity and I spoke it into the world, the negativity went away and it was an open environment for me to succeed. And with food, I feel like a lot of people, and I hate this, like I hate this, and we're going to hit the season with the New Year's resolutions and then like the summertime coming around, is they're like, I'm not going to tell anybody, but I'm going to secretly try to lose 15 pounds so I can look better on the beach. Or I'm not going to tell anybody, I'm going to make a New Year's resolution so I can look better so people like me. And if I could just speak in expletives for like an hour on how I feel about that, I would. But it's completely, completely BS. And it really frustrates me and it hurts my feelings. And it really angers me that people feel that way, and the example that we're leading for children and other people in this world that don't feel okay to be who they are. And so that, yeah, that's a big one for me.
Do you think if people are setting goals as well and committing to changing their life, then on some level, and I know I've done this in the past, that is an admission that some part of their life is wrong or some part of them is bad and they don't like it and that's why they don't want to talk about it?
Totally, totally. I feel like that happens all the time. And I feel like that comes from a place, and one of my, the number three on my list, because I'm going to give everybody my three tips to do this, but the number three on my list is taking a look at your life a little bit differently. And I feel like you nailed it on the head. People only make goals or only profess them out there or work on them typically because they feel like something isn't working. They want to be different. And typically that's why you end up repeating the same results because you are still in the same vicious cycle. So you're like, I don't feel good about my body. I need to lose 15 pounds. You lose 15 pounds and then you gain it right back. Or I need a new habit and then you break the habit. Or I need a new job and then you're working at seven new jobs in the course of a year. And you hear it all the time with like relationships. Like this guy treated me like this, so we broke up. And then a year later, you had seven of the identical breakups with all different people. And it has nothing to do with the circumstances outside of you. It's how you view yourself. And as long as you view yourself like that, you're never going to create different results. And so one of the things that we talk about all the time is viewing events as neutral. So my four rules for living life are no fault, no blame, no guilt, no shame. So anywhere in your life, and specifically food right now, no fault, no blame, no guilt, no shame. And the reason I say that is because it's all about viewing things as neutral. So the example I always give, because this typically resonates with people, if you and I were sitting at a coffee table and there was a car accident in front of us, how you react and how I react are completely different. For you, you may want to run up to the car, help get people out. For me, I would probably get triggered back to Afghanistan and getting blown up and cry, shut down, and have a nervous reaction where I want to fight everybody. No matter what or how we react, the car accident is still the car accident. Like it happened and it's neutral. We put the energy and the charge on it. And when we do that internally, typically we tend to punish ourselves. We're like, great, I was on this diet. I made it 8 days and then I ate a cupcake. So now I'm going to beat myself up. I'm going to quit. And I'm never going to try again because look, I'm not good enough. And then we collect evidence against ourselves to repeat the vicious cycle. So if you can live with the rules, no fault, no blame, no guilt, and no shame, those events become empowerments and lessons for you to become better. So let's say you're on day 12 of your workout routine. You've been 12 days in a row, you've been eating clean, and then you go on a bender and you eat like six large pizzas and drink a bunch of beer. And typically most people are going to go to, look, I can't do it anymore. I'm going to quit. I don't have the capabilities. I self-sabotage, blah, 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 blah. That's one option. Option two is to look at it like this. The event itself is neutral. I tell people to get a pen and a piece of paper when you look at things like that. Write down what worked, like what worked that had you motivated for 12 days, like what worked that created that awesome success, and then what didn't work that caused you to binge, to have the pizza, to have the beer, and to self-loathe, and then this is the best part, number three, what can I add right now to create a different result? And then you refocus and you set a goal to only accomplish that specific thing to add to create a different result. And then you go on tomorrow and go on day 13 and day 14 and you have to celebrate every win. Every single win matters. If you're like, hey, I'm actually going to put clothes on today and not wear my pajamas, you need to get out of the shower and be like, I'm a bad awesome. I wanted to swear. I'm an awesome person and I need to celebrate how amazing I am. Look, I put pants on today. Or like, look, I showered today. And I literally, like, it's a joke in our house. My wife and I do this. We'll write like notes to ourselves. We used to write on our mirror, but I'll get out of the shower and be like, babe, look how sexy I am. And she's like, you're crazy. And I'm like, no, but like, really, I am. And all I'm doing is conditioning myself to always celebrate every single accomplishment I make and always focus on what works. Always focus on what works, because what you resist persists. So if you get into that vicious cycle of fault and blame and guilt and shame, and you focus on everything that isn't working, you're going to create more of what's not working. So that's a piece of the mindset stuff.
Have you ever read anything by Dr. John DeMartini?
No, I have not, but
no, I have not. You will love him. So you're talking about making everything neutral and not being or not feeling bad about. Did you just write down his name?
I did.
That's awesome. That's the kind of stuff that I do as well. Every notebook I've got names of people whose books I got to read and read. So he would talk about something like, let's say, addiction to food or falling off the wagon and going out and drinking when you know you shouldn't have. He would say, all right, let's demartini this. And he calls it his demartini technique or the demartini method. And he'd say, all right, let's take the example of a food addiction. Write down all the things that you think are negative about that. So it's made me fat. I can't walk past McDonald's without eating it. I'm ashamed of it. And put a monetary value on all those things, which you can do. Like, it sounds weird to put a monetary value on, like, how much does it cost me to be fat? But, you know, looking at, I'm talking to you on Skype right now, everything I can see has a monetary value, like your jumper, your microwave, your lights behind you, everything in life has a monetary value. And then go and add up all the good things that have come out of that and start adding monetary values to those until you even everything out, and like, be really specific. So, all right, I'm a food addict. I can't go out and eat with my friends because I'm embarrassed about what I'll eat. Put a monetary value on that. What's something positive that's come out of that? Well, I know I don't want to live my life this way. I know what kinds of things don't work for me with food, and just even everything out. Is that how you try and teach people to... Was that similar to your approach?
Yeah, it's actually really similar. I'd never heard of that. I'm going to look a lot of that up after. And what I like to do, I like the evening out method. And a better example for me would be, like, let's say I relapsed into bulimia. Like, let's say, like, right after the wedding, I just got married 3 weeks ago. And so Lindsay and I got married. And after the wedding, we went on like a bender. Like, we were eating gluten-free pizza like every night, eating brownies and cookies. And I actually probably put on about 15 pounds. And I actually started crying myself to sleep at night. And I finally looked at Lindsay and I'm like, babe, I need to talk to you. Like, I'm going back down to this thing. So I took my own advice and I made a list. And my list was what worked. And the what worked list, I always try to make longer than the what didn't work, but sometimes it doesn't. But I look at like the what worked list, and my list was like, well, I'm married to the love of my life. She loves me for who I am. My clothes still fit. I feel good about that. Like, and I went there, I'm still cooking meals, I'm still working. And then what didn't work was every time I let insecurity creep in, where I defined my value by how I looked, where I thought that food was in control of me, where I thought that it wasn't possible to create different results. And then the third column is what can I do differently? The best part about that is I get to rip up list one and list two and just focus on list three. And I just write down one thing. I'm like, what can I do right now to create a different result tomorrow? And it's like, right now, I'm going to drink another glass of water and I'm going to make my mission to get up, work out in the morning and have a good breakfast. And I do it one incremental step at a time. And then when that workout works and when the breakfast works, then I'm like, holy crap, I did it. What worked? Everything worked. Nothing didn't work. I'm going to do it again. And so we live this life in constant inquiry as to like how we can be better. Even if you set out to make $1 million and you make a million, there's still room for growth. Even if you want to run a mile in 7 minutes and you do it in 6:30, there's still room for growth. And so if you're constantly in this cycle of, great, this was amazing, and I really, really tried my best, now let's hack my human optimization a little bit more, let me be the best version of myself, stay in this positive mindset and try it again, and then you're just continually pushing yourself. The double-edged side of that is this is where those rules come into play. The no fault, no blame, no guilt, no shame. Let's say I write my goal to go to the gym and eat a healthy breakfast, and I sleep 2 hours past my alarm and I have a burrito for breakfast. I don't get to punish myself and give up. That's the other side of it. It's like, what worked? Nothing. What didn't work? Everything. What can I do differently? set a new goal, try it again for lunch. And like, that's literally like the method in which we live. And my wife says it best. Like, she always says it to me when I'm overwhelmed with business specifically. She's like, babe, all you have to do is one thing. And if you do one thing today and one thing tomorrow, at the end of 30 days, you've done 30 things and you're 30 things further down your list than you were 30 days ago. And as simple as it sounds, like, it is the most astounding advice that like always lands for me, because there's those days where I feel motivated and there's days I feel tired, exhausted, drained. And I just want to sit on the couch and veg out. But I know that if I get my lazy butt off the couch and get up and do one thing, that tomorrow I'm going to thank myself for it. And every day I'm striving to be better than I was yesterday.
That's hugely important. Now let's talk about taking a break away from that striving, because obviously everyone wants the best for themselves, but as my mentor Paul Check would say, a tired warrior is easily defeated. So we got to take time away from the hustle, so to speak. So we're coming up to a holiday period now. You just went on holidays. I've just been on holidays as well. And we both, I guess the word we could use would be deviated from the plan. Like, I was in a place called the Hunter Valley, which is like the wine area of Australia. And I was having dessert like twice a day at least. Just ordering whatever sounded good off menus, not even thinking about the health side of things. But I didn't feel bad about it because I gave myself permission to go over there, do whatever I thought it would be that would make me feel good without making myself, you know, like drinking 14 bottles of wine and falling over it. And I woke up every single morning thinking that wasn't perfect, but I gave myself permission to do it and I stuck with what I said was okay. So I didn't feel bad about it. How can someone approach this upcoming holiday period, which is always worse than everyone thinks it's going to be in terms of health, without being boring or totally falling off the wagon?
Yeah, and that's an awesome question, and the timing is impeccable. And actually, you said it twice, and the way that you said it is exactly what you need to do. You get to give yourself permission. So one of the things that I experienced when I was struggling with my bulimia and my own eating disorders and body image issues is that it was almost like there were two sides of myself, and I was accountable to one side, but that one side was like a dictator, and there was only one way. And that was the right way. And if I didn't do it that way, then I went to punishment, loathing, and then it repeated the vicious cycle. And one thing that really, really helped me, number one, you got to give yourself permission. Like, I don't ever want people to make choices that segregate them from their family members, from their life, from their happiness, from their joy, or recharging their tank. Like Paul Check says, awesome dude, super smart, but just on the simplest level, your tank has to be full in order for you to do your best. And if you're not paying back to yourself and filling your tank up, you're always going to run out of gas, and you really need to figure out what makes you tick. So for me, what happened after the wedding, the whole stress of the wedding kind of ended. I fit into my suit, Lindsay fit into her dress, and I'm like, you know what? We're married. I give myself permission to just kind of relax and be. And that's not enough for me. Like, that doesn't work for me, because then I use it as like this catch-all, be-all. Okay, I'll do whatever I want, and then 3 weeks later, I'll feel guilty about it. So at every single meal, I literally say out loud, if I'm going to eat something, whether it's dessert. And by the way, after the wedding, we went out to dinner probably 4 or 5 times and actually ordered dessert for dinner and dinner after dessert. Like, we were ordering dessert first because we were like, oh my God, this is so good. I actually have to verbally say, I forgive myself for eating this meal, or I forgive myself for judging myself for ordering this meal, or I choose, and this is the big one, this is the big one, and the mindset piece of it. I just want everybody listening to know, life does not happen to you. Like, nothing in life happens to you. You are not a victim. You are 100% responsible that everything comes your way. So I choose to eat this brownie. I know that on the other side of it, I may experience weight gain, I may experience fatigue, I may break out, I may have indigestion, bloating, whatever side effect I may have, but I choose. When I choose, I know I'm 100% responsible for the results of the choice I'm making. And therefore, I don't go into blame, guilt, fault, or shame, because I very intently said, you know what? It's okay if I have 2 glasses of wine. I choose this wine, or I choose this cookie. So I take the power away from myself to actually punish myself. And for the holidays coming up, for everybody listening, you have to have a healthy relationship with yourself, but you have to know what makes you tick. You have to know your triggers, and you have to know your strengths. You have to know what you can attain and what you can healthily manage while staying positive and focused on your goals. And it's never healthy to obsess about food and to like eat this strict diet 12 months out of the year. And to, like, it's just not, it's not healthy. That's a form of orthorexia. But knowing that, I think the easiest way for me to explain it is when I really get upset, when I hear people say like, oh, it was so hard for me at the holidays because there was a table full of cookies and I ate them all. And I'm like, boo-hoo, I don't feel bad for you. You chose to eat them all. And you could have just as well said to me, there was a table full of cookies and I wanted to eat them all, so I did. And I would have high-fived you and I would have said, good job on making a choice. What are you going to do differently? You know, so you have to be responsible. Like, you have to realize that all the results that you get in your life, your job, your relationship, your work, your fitness, your food, everything that comes into your life is because you put it there. Like, you created it, which is amazingly powerful because you can change it. You can always change it by choosing something different. And that's where that list really comes in. It's just about focusing on small choices and realizing that the small incremental change can have a lifelong dripping effect of crazy results in your life. So for me, it's giving yourself permission, realizing that you are an adult or a child and responsible. No one is force feeding you, tying you down, and shoving cookies down your throat. And if they are, they might be a good friend anyways, because sometimes you need to eat that stuff. But no one's forcing it on you. So you have to be responsible. And this goes back to everything in the beginning, the vulnerability piece, the authenticity piece, being honest with yourself. Like, that's where the thing is. We talked about how our brains are like our biggest excuse makers. And in essence, you're lying to yourself. And the truth is, as someone who would know you, like in my life, someone said this to me. I think my wife said this to me. She's like, how can anyone ever trust you if you can't even trust yourself? And I didn't really like get it at first. And it's like, every time that I make a commitment and I break it, I'm lying to myself. Every time I say I'm going to do something and I don't do it, I'm lying to myself and I'm justifying it. Which is why in a lot of my life, I lied about things, I manipulated things, and I positioned them in a certain manner for me to look a certain way, rather than being authentic and being like, hey, I said I was going to do this and I didn't do it. Not explaining myself, not coming up with excuses, realizing I made a choice not to do it. And on the other side of that is you can always choose to do it as well. And everything is, there's a very even balance of, you know, negative and positive, but it's all about how you see it when you look at it as neutral. It's no longer, oh, I didn't follow through, let me beat myself up, I'm a bad person. It's a, hey, I made a commitment and I tried and I didn't do as good as I could have done. So I'm going to try again and I'm going to try again and I'm going to try again. And there's so many entrepreneurial quotes about it, but the only difference between successful and unsuccessful people is successful people never stop trying. If one plan doesn't work, try another one. You know, there's always the game of the motivational thing can just go on forever. But in the simplistic of it, if you completely stay honest and congruent with yourself and you trust yourself and you keep your word to yourself and you choose and give yourself forgiveness and the option to trust yourself, you're going to have amazing results that you never thought possible. When you're not defined by how people see you or how you look or how the number on the scale is or how clothes fit, but you're defined on your value as a human being, like just your shell, like how you look and how I look. Like, we didn't get to go to the car dealership and pick this model. Like, we were issued this model, but on the inside, we're all amazing, perfect, whole and complete human beings. And so really identifying with that energetically on the inside and realizing that the value you bring to this planet has absolutely nothing to do with how you look. You know, like, it didn't care what Martin Luther King looked like. It didn't care what Nelson Mandela looked like. It didn't care what, you know, Harriet Tubman looked like or Rosa Parks or anybody else that we look up to in this country. It cared about what they stood for, what their values were, and their commitments and resolve to see them through. So I guess that's a little deeper, but I don't know. Love yourself. That would be like the easiest one. Like, just love yourself.
Absolutely. Now, let's get on to the last thing that I wanted to touch base with you about, which is my concept of the average perfect day. Now, people talk about goal setting quite a lot and they say, oh, I want to make this amount of money or I want to live in this kind of house or I want to do this for work or whatever. But it's, I mean, those are all really important things to do, but I have a different perspective. Not that it should replace goal setting, but I just feel like this is really important to do. Now, we've historically always remembered things and things have always had significance by stories. So that's how Greeks used to pass on their traditions. Like the Odyssey was a song. The story about, what was his name? Odysseus. and going and doing the Trojan War and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's how we remember stuff. We don't remember bullet points on a list or whatever. So I always try and get people, when they're trying to change their life, to think about, what would your average perfect day look like? What would you choose as a day that you had to live over and over and over, every, like, you were Bill Murray in Groundhog Day, that you had to live every single day that you would be totally happy with, that would make you feel fulfilled, that would make you feel happy, that would get everything that you wanted to do done and give you everything that you need? What are your thoughts on that?
I love that. We do that. We do that a lot with our friends. We mastermind, you know, monthly. We'll talk about things. But one thing that my wife taught me, when it comes to that day and that story, you have to talk about it like it's already happened. You have to stand in the present like you're living it, because that's what aligns your subconscious to create those results. Like, I feel like your clients are the luckiest people in the world that you see it like that, because that is one of the most powerful things that you can do, is like the visualization of actually being in it and realizing that it's possible to stand in that, and getting as descriptive as possible, like hitting every sense. Like, what does it smell like? What does it look like? What does it feel like? If you're on a beach, what does the breeze feel like? Is it 75? Is it humid? Is it balmy? What's the sound? What's the smell? God, you are the first person outside of our circle of people that I have ever heard talk about that. That is phenomenal. And for anybody listening, if you listen to this guy's podcast, you need to do everything he says, because that is like literally visualization is like one of the most important things that you can do to create amazing results in your life. And it's not about, what's interesting too, is I'm actually sitting here remembering mine. Like, a year and a half ago, I did some work, and part of it is doing that and introducing yourself to strangers and talking about yourself and your goals and your story. I'm actually sitting in my story right now. I'm married to the love of my life. We built a brand new house together. We both work from home and make our own schedules. Like, every single thing that I talked about a year and a half ago is currently in my life right now. Like, literally in my life. We're getting ready to have children. Like, it's actually really crazy, because it just brought it kind of full circle for me. But I actually don't have much to say on that, except it is the best tool that I've ever heard anyone on any podcast ever say to their listeners. So I would highly encourage everybody that's listening to do that. And write it down. Like, record yourself. Write it down. Make it real. Put it in a journal. Represent it on a vision board. But and I will say, and I did say, you did say this, the more tactile you get, the more senses you tie in, like how it is. Make your goals SMART too. And by SMART, it's an acronym. It's SMART, measurable, actionable, realistic, and time-bound. You have to make them attainable and real so you can get there. The more specific that you can be, the better chance that you have of attaining those goals, because you can then take the steps to create them and work your life backwards. You know, if you're telling your story a year from now and you are specific and say, you know what, I want to net $5,000 more a month in my business. Then once you know that in 12 months, I want to do that by this point, you can work backwards and be like, that's actually only another $800 a month. What can I do this week to generate another $200, and then $200 next week, and create that result? So I think that's extremely powerful.
It's a lot easier to do as well than think about these huge long-term goals. Like, I want to have children in 10 years. Like, if you're thinking about the average perfect day, it's like, on my average perfect day, would I choose to wake up and not think about exercise as something that makes me feel good and do something that I actually enjoy? No. Okay, well, I want today to be my average perfect day, so I'm going to just go and do the exercise because I know it makes me feel good right now, rather than planning and planning and planning ahead. So this might be a very personal question then, George, but what would your average perfect day look like?
Yeah, no, it's not personal at all. It's actually amazing. I genuinely am probably living about 75% of it right now. And so my average perfect day, I would wake up in bed next to my wife, which I get to do every day. We have a 10-year-old, and I would have two other children, both younger, probably like one and three, a boy and a girl, be able to come in, walk in, run in, say good morning to us. I would get up and I would start making the entire family breakfast in the kitchen. I'd be halfway done with breakfast. My wife would walk down. She would hug me from behind and say, good morning. Thank you for being a great father and a husband. We would have a family breakfast together, get the kids ready for school, plan out our day. I would spend probably 2 to 3 hours working, creating things that inspire people, motivate people, creating recipes, photographing recipes, talking about mindset and setting goals for people to have the tools to succeed. I would eat lunch with my wife, and then we would get back together with our family and go to the park and play, take the dog to the dog park, go to the trampoline park, and use play as our form of exercise, getting reconnected to the child and all one of us. And then we would all sit down for family dinner, maybe play a game, sit by the fire if the weather's dependent, have friends over, have our kids' friends over, put our kids to bed, read them a bedtime story, and then spend quality time with my wife and tell her how important she is to me, what she means to me, who she represents in my life, acknowledge everything great that happens and set future goals for tomorrow, the next day, the next week, and work together as a team, like as a family unit to accomplish those goals and set our mindset for the next day and go to bed.
Now, this is the other important question that I ask right after I've helped someone figure out their average perfect day. What kinds of things would you definitely not ever do on your average perfect day?
I would not. Yeah, that's a really good one. On my average perfect day, I would not allow my body or mind the capacity to be mean to myself. I would not allow myself any space to focus on anything that did not work, whether it's self-loathing, putting myself down, being upset about goals. I would definitely not do that. I would not have anyone in my life that isn't where I want to be or does not support where me and my family are going. I would not have people that don't support family values, that don't support children, that don't support marriage, that don't support entrepreneurship. I would definitely eliminate all that from my life, and I would keep my circle as clean, as positive and productive as possible with the people that are in my life, because we only have a limited amount of energy, and where we choose to give it is extremely important, and family is like number one for me. So I would only surround myself with people that support that. And then I would, other than that, I love the other stuff I do. I love eating chocolate and then working it off the next day. And I love just being playful and learning as we go, like taking adventures with my family. We travel a lot and all that other stuff. So I think the biggest one, I said it already, but I'm going to reiterate it because it's definitely a lesson I learned. I would never be afraid to say no. On my average perfect day, I would never be afraid to say no, because every time you say no to someone else, you're saying yes to yourself. And you need to say yes to yourself to have the life and the results that you want in this world without trying to impress other people. So that would be my big, big, big one. And that's a lesson that it took me 32 years to learn. It is never, never wrong to say no and never have to explain yourself. So yeah, that's a really, really good one. I feel all like motivated and tingly right now.
Good. You've made me blush by saying this is a good idea, my little average perfect day drill, but I swear, that.
Like, no, I'm serious. Like, we do, my wife and I staff personal development trainings, like 3, 4, 5 week long trainings. And it's something that we do very similarly. And I've never heard anybody else do, unless they're like huge into the personal development space or NLP, like neuro-linguistic programming, which my wife is certified in. But other than that, it's phenomenal. So like, I can't exaggerate enough for the people that are listening how important it is. And what I do, just so you know, I take my phone when like I'm driving or I'm coming up with something. I'll actually record myself and talk to myself. Like if I have a goal or I'm telling my story, one of the best ways to succeed is to actually listen to your own voice talking about your goals and your dreams, because it vibrates the same for you because it's actually yours and it makes it more real hearing yourself speak it. So I record a lot of mine and then I'll play them back. Like when I'm out on my motorcycle, I'll listen to like positive mantras or stories or affirmations that I've recorded about myself to shift my mindset and reground me in my goals.
I'm going to start doing that because I'm a writer. I should be a speaker. That's a great idea.
Yeah. And it's really easy. You're not speaking to anybody but yourself and you already have it written down. Write it down and record it and then listen to it. It's really powerful.
I should do that. I will start doing that.
By when?
Well, as soon as I get off this, I got to go and do a meeting after this podcast, but then I'm going to go and get my book out and I'm going to record it. Listen to it every morning.
That's what a smart goal is. I said by when, so you actually have to do it by the end of the day today and then you get to live in it and have the results and move on.
I'll send you a tweet when I'm done or something, eh?
Perfect.
All right, George. Well, this has been an absolute pleasure. I highly doubt that anyone listening would have thought that a civilized caveman would have come on and talked about this kind of stuff, but I hope everyone can see how useful and important it is. This is really been an amazing experience talking to you. I honestly can't thank you enough for joining me. It's been great.
Awesome. You know, it's a blast to be here. And I'm going to end with a quote. This is a really, really good one. There's no sense in punishing your future for mistakes of your past. Forgive yourself, grow from it, and let it go.
Oh, yeah. And for everyone out there who's listening, if you want to hear more of that kind of stuff from George, civilizedcaveman.com. That's the website, right?
Yes, sir. That is the best place to find me.
Gotcha. Well, thanks a lot, George. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for having me, guys. It was a blast.
Authentic Wellness Radio.